listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is Friday, July 3rd. It is the Forza Podcast. It is your boy, Marsh. I am here to start off your holiday weekend talking some Hurricane football. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how the hell are ya?
Dude, I'm doing good. Big meet of this weekend, so pumped. Very excited.
Yes, the 4th of July tomorrow, stars, stripes, banners. We're going to shoot off the fireworks. We're going to go streaking in downtown. We're going to celebrate the greatest country in the world.
Snoop-a-loop.
Snoop-a-loop, bring your green hat.
Yeah. It's a great movie, man. I'll watch that this weekend.
I watched it a few weekends ago because it was funny because everyone, like, they always, like, called my dad, like, Frank. Like, Frank the Tank. And it's just so funny, like, when his wife, Mrs. Ari, who plays the wife, she goes, like, no, we don't want Frank the Tank coming back, do we?
Yeah.
Honey, Frank the Tank is gone.
But it hits your lips. Oh, dude, I love when,
again.
Yeah, when he's getting drunk at that frat party, dude. That's peak Will Ferrell. You know, I mean, we've talked about it before, but I love him in smaller roles like that. He just killed it, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, one of my favorite movies. Well, we have a big show for you guys today. We got a guest. We got D-Money from Kane's Insight coming on. Very excited to have him on. The dude is like a freaking encyclopedia when it comes to the Hurricanes. And after that, we'll answer some mailbag questions. And yeah, and we're just getting back into the swing of things, man. I'm happy to be back on social media. Happy to be back on the podcast. It's been helping a lot, bro.
Yeah, well, dude, that's good to hear. I mean, that's what's important, right? So, do whatever feels right, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I guess, should we dial them up?
Yep, I got them right here.
Alrighty.
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's up, D-Money? How you doing, man?
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Pretty good. So we are very excited to welcome on our guest tonight. First time guest on Fours Up. We got D Money from Kane's Insight. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right. Doing all right. How you guys doing?
Well, you know, just enjoying summer life out here in the great state of Utah, waiting to, you know, get back down to South Florida. But other than that, you know, just trying to survive this COVID, praying that there's a football season.
Yeah, man, it's good. Just enjoying the holiday weekend. So, you know, but yeah, man, like Marsh said, just praying there's football so that we can come down and hang out with you guys down there in South Florida.
If it means full stadiums, I'm down. But I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going to happen. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's a little scary, but let's get right into it. So we wanted to start off with some recruiting talk, because obviously Miami has been killing it on the recruiting trail, and I wanted to ask you about two specific guys. The first one is four-star safety Cameron Kitchens, out of Miami Northwestern. He is set to announce his decision next Saturday. D-Money, how confident should Canes fans be that he comes to Miami?
I think very confident. I'm saying, like, you know, 8 on a scale of 1 to 10. If I had to say as of now, he wants to be a Hurricane. Now, I never say 10 out of 10 because these kids change their minds. You've heard so many times a kid will commit on signing day or sign on signing day, and he'll say, yeah, I made up my mind this morning. You know, so you really can't ever put a 100% on these. But I feel just as good about Kitchens as I did about Brinson. Of course, they're teammates, not just at Northwestern, but on the Immortal 7-on-7 team. So these guys are real tight. Same thing with Tim Irvin, Brantley. Those guys are all on the same 7-on-7 team on top of being on the same Northwestern team that won states. So tight-knit group, and I think Kitchens, although, you know, he's getting recruited real hard by Auburn, Wes McGriff, former Miami defensive back coach, now the defensive back coach at Auburn, extremely good recruiter. You know, it's a tough battle there, but I think Banda will pull it out, and we'll get Kitchens.
Hey, I love to hear it, man. I think that's how most of us are feeling. It's crazy. Kitchens would be the 5th player from Miami Northwestern to commit for the 2021 class. What stands out to you most about him when you watch his game film?
Yeah, well, I've seen him in person. I've seen the film, and I've, you know, his 7-on-7 coach, Coach Duasso, is a good friend of mine. So I've been hearing about all these kids, you know, the I call the Immortals crew, for a while. So when I say that crew, it's Brinson, Kitchens, Tim Burns, Khalil Brantley, and I believe that's it. I might be missing someone, but you know, they all play on the same team. And from Ja'Cory talking to Coach Duasso,
I think that's the other one.
Ja'Cory, right, but he's not okay. So he's on the Northwestern, but he's not on the on the.
Okay.
So let's say 4 out of 4 for those guys. Hopefully, you know, and talking to Coach Duasso about him, the thing he says is the intangibles stand out. That this guy's the leader of the team. He's all football. All he cares about is football. Great personality, but again, very serious. Similar to Jaquan Johnson, I know that Banda has been using that recruiting pitch with him, saying you're going to be the next Jaquan. And I think when he says that, he's not just talking about his position, but really more his presence, his kind of his leadership, his confidence, you know, just the presence that Jaquan brought. I think that's what you get with Kitchens, is really the intangibles that you want at safety. As far as tangibles, you know, he can run. He's not like probably Avante Williams speed, but if you look at his 40 as a sophomore, he ran about 4.67. Which doesn't sound that fast at the Lasers, but you consider Avante Williams at that same age ran 4.72, ended up dropping it to about a 4.52. So, you know, this guy's got speed, and I'm sure right now he's probably running in that 4.5 range. He was faster than Collier on those same clocks at that opening last year as a sophomore, faster than Ja'Cory Brooks by a good margin. So this guy can run a little bit. He's got good size. He's really bulked up. I'd say he's about 5'11", 200, talking to people around there. Probably not going to get that much bigger than that, but, you know, college ready body. And then the ball skills. This is a guy who has, along with Jaden Francois, has probably been the top ball hawk in South Florida the past couple of years. So he's very productive in terms of interceptions. He's a punt returner, or he does return punts for Northwestern at times, which shows you can do something with the ball in his hands. Just gives you a feel for his athletic ability. And he can hit. You watch his junior highlights. There's some nice hits on there, but really his sophomore highlights, he's got some depleters. I'm trying to remember the exact game it was, but he had a hit as a sophomore. It looked like Brandon Merriweather, if you remember that name from back in the early 2000s. And that kind of put him on the map as a sophomore. When he had that hit, it was such a nasty, nasty shot. I think it's like the first play of his sophomore highlights. But when he had that hit, I remember there was a ton of buzz about him locally just right away, because that was his introduction. So he can hit. He has athletic ability. He has ball skills, first and foremost. I think he can play in the box, but really more of a rangy safety, just because his timing and instincts are so good. And physically, I think he's got what it takes. So there's nothing really bad I can say about Kitchens, except, you know, he's not Sean Taylor freakazoid or a Tyreek Stevenson freak. But other than that, I mean, the guy is rock solid.
Yeah, that's funny that, sorry to cut you off, but that's funny that you mentioned Jaquan Johnson, because this morning I had an article published for State of the U about Kitchens, and just the way that he plays, it reminded me a lot of Jaquan Johnson, both with his playmaking ability, because I mean, Kitchens I think had 9 or 10 interceptions last year, but he also had 74 tackles. And if you remember Jaquan, I mean, I think his senior season he was second on the Hurricanes in tackles. And so, I mean, Kitchens is a guy just like that, always around the ball. And so I think that, I mean, especially with the depth that we're building at safety, you know, I really like Kitchens. And then the next guy I wanted to ask you about is a wide receiver, Breshard Smith, out of Miami Palmetto. I have an article coming out tomorrow, and I watched his film last night, really for the first time. And that dude can play. That dude is an absolute stud. I think, yeah, 36 catches last year, 628 yards, and 13 touchdowns. Dude was scoring a touchdown almost half, like, you know, every other time he touched the football. And so, you know, what are your thoughts about him, and what do you think he can bring to, you know, this Rhett Lashley offense?
Love him. He's been one of my favorites since he was committed to the Gators. So, you know, when he decommitted, that was a happy day on its own, just because he wasn't going to go there. And then Miami jumped in the mix. My understanding of the recruitment is that Lashley and Likens have really done a good job selling him on his role, and at just out-recruited other teams. They've just been going so hard on him, and that's why we're the favorite to land him. As a player, legit 4.4 guy, doesn't run track, but has tested 4.4 in the 40, which for a high school kid is really moving with a verified time. And then you see it on the film, kind of that running back receiver hybrid. In terms of role, I'm not saying he's as good as these guys, but, you know, Percy Harvin, Tyreek Hill at a younger age was really more of a running back than a receiver. He kind of grew into that receiving. So I'd put him in that category just in terms of the way you use him. Or Kadarius Toney, for another example, at the University of Florida. One thing about Breshard Smith that, you know, I saw him play against Belen. I've seen him play a few times. The thing he brings is he's kind of like, not only does he play running back, he's built like a running back. He bounces off tackles. You know, he does all those things that you want a running back to do from a physical standpoint. So when you put him at receiver, a slot receiver, he's not just going to get open. He can actually break tackles and make things happen that way. He has the build of a running back. So, you know, he's not the tallest guy in the world, but I don't think that's going to matter for how they're going to use him. And really, to me, it would be a major, major get. Clear four-star player to me, just on talent, and someone that I know that the offensive coaches are real excited about and have a specific plan for. I think it really came down to him or Yul-Keith Brown for that role. Yul-Keith, another one of those Miami Immortal players. And I think they just felt better about Breshard Smith. Personality-wise, probably a little faster, although they're both pretty fast. And, you know, I would probably – that's a close battle, but I would probably lean the same way and go with Smith.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree. And I think that Smith could maybe even – announce his decision even before Kinchins does so. But let's move to the guys on Green Tree, the guys that are at that are on the current roster. So big news, I think it broke last week. Navon Donaldson is going to be redshirting this season. And so who do you think takes his place on the offensive line at the guard position? And do you have a new starting five because of Donaldson redshirting?
Well, I'm glad he did. This is something I've been calling for since he got hurt. Really more than anything for his health. I mean, he's had a really risky weight. You know, he's over 400 pounds at this point from what I understand. So, I mean, it's just number one, it's a health issue, you know, for living. Two, he has a health issue in terms of his knee. So he's probably not gonna be ready to start the season anyways. And then three, he needs to lose weight for his performance. You know, so that's probably the least important of the three, but he needs to lose weight just to be if he wants to play in the NFL, he needs to lose weight because he didn't play very good last year. So, you know, in terms of how it affects the starting lineup, I would go off what we saw in spring as the best indicator. And, you know, I went to a couple practices in spring, and consistently the offensive line broke down left to right with Campbell at left tackle, Gaynor at center, and Delano Scape at right guard. It was the other two spots that had a little bit more rotation. So at left guard, which would be the Donaldson spot, you had Jalen Rivers competing with Usman Traore, the junior college transfer we got last year. Usman was playing more than Jalen. I thought Jalen had a chance to pass him, but this COVID situation makes it tougher for a freshman, so we'll have to see how he comes in. But that's a battle to watch. And then right tackle, Kalyon Herbert and Zion. I'd say Kalyon probably had 60% of the starting reps versus 40% for Zion. I think Zion's probably the better player there. We'll see how that shakes out. But that's how I see the offensive line. Now, that was before Jared Williams came in, so that changes things as well. He's obviously going to start. I think it's just going to come down to Campbell, see how Campbell performs, because you can move Jared Williams to the left, although he played at the right of Houston. And then, you know, the tackle spots are up in the air. I think the only one you could say for sure is Jared Williams. They clearly liked Campbell the most in spring because he started every practice. But, you know, it's not like he's a proven starter. So I would say Gaynor, Scaife, those two you can put in the bank, and Williams. Those three, they're going to start, and then everything else is up for grabs.
And I wanted to ask you this because and I'm in total agreement with you. Do you think that there's a possibility that for this season Gaynor is switched to left guard, and then you put Ja'Kai Clark in at center?
Yes, that's a great point. So Ja'Kai Clark, at least when I was there, he played center exclusively, the backup center to Gaynor. I think that's where he fits best, just size wise. You could move Gaynor to guard. He's physical enough. He's not huge, but he's strong enough. I think that is a definite possibility. So it really just depends how the tackles shake out. You know, if it was me, I would probably lean towards having Scaife and Williams be my tackles. I like Scaife at tackle. I always thought he was a tackle. I know people always try to move him inside because of his height, and maybe in the NFL that's where he ends up. But to me, the guy played tackle in high school. He played tackle at the camps, or I guess, you know, play tackle at the camps. But, you know, he did well in an island at the camps, never had a problem pass blocking. He has long arms. He's athletic. And he played good there last year. So, to me, I'd keep Scaife at tackle and then have Williams there, and you have two solid tackles. That would be my preference. I don't think that's going to happen. But what you suggested makes sense if you want to get Jakai Clark on the field, because he played pretty good last year. So, you know, that would be interesting. I mean, you also, you know, part of it is also Gaynor was so solid last year at center and is going to be a more veteran center. You kind of want that experience at center.
Mm-hmm.
Clark played guard last year. Do you go move Clark back outside to guard and keep Gaynor at center? I don't know. It's interesting. I can tell you in spring, pretty much every rep I saw was those two both at center.
Cool. Well, we love having you on, man. We love hearing your insight. So I'm really interested to hear what you think about our wide receiver unit. We've talked a lot about them on the show. To me, I feel like the only guy that I'm super confident going into this fall, you know, like with giving him a slated role, a big role, is D. Wiggins. I'm very interested to see how the rest of the unit shakes out. But what's your take on that group?
Yeah, I think it's a weakness, the fact that we don't have a number one receiver. I think if you look at King's receivers in Houston, he probably had, I don't want to say better receivers, because I think Miami's receivers can be better than what he had in Houston, but probably more established receivers at Houston. So that's the one position where I think he might have a step back, at least initially. Certainly tight end, much better, and running backs, much better. So that's a concern, just the lack of a number one. As far as a guy that's solid, I would say Harley would actually be my guy that's for sure going to be there. Just because of, I mean, he's a leading returning receiver, so he's actually done something in games. Wiggins has had flashes, but Harley's, you know, no one's been super productive, but he'd be the most productive one coming back. Extremely hard worker, great attitude. He blocks for such a small guy. And then in spring, he was really, really good with King. The practice I went to, I mean, that was his guy. He was going to Harley all the time in the slot. So I think Harley is going to play a big role. Number one receiver, that's not really what I think he's built for, but I think in terms of like, who do I trust the most as we sit here today, I would say Harley. Wiggins, you saw what he could do on those posts. That's really his bread and butter. Hands will be the issue with Wiggins. He just needs to get more consistent with his hands. I've seen him make spectacular catches in practice, but he drops a lot of easy ones, and you know, body catches some balls that should be plucked. That's going to be the challenge for him. It could be like a Tommy Streeter or a Hankerson that kind of develops those hands. We'll see on that one. Pope, you know, didn't really have a great spring. We're still waiting. He has the speed. I could see him making an impact in terms of catch and runs, you know, jet sweeps, things of that nature. That's probably the best thing for Pope, along with deep balls, which King throws beautifully. Peyton is the one that I think everybody knows probably has the most talent of the crew. But with him, some maturity stuff, nothing too bad. But you know, there's some learning to do, and didn't have an amazing spring, but it was only four practices, so you can't really judge. But everybody knows that he's the guy that has the chance to be that number one receiver from a talent standpoint. He was great against the scout team last year. So that's the one to watch, to see if he can really make a step forward. Again, this pandemic kind of set everybody back, but watching him, and then the freshman, Restrepo, made a lot of catches in spring. I could see him backing up Harley in the slot just because he's so smart, competitive. He'll be ready to rock and roll. He's built like a running back if you saw him in March. I think you went to a couple of those practices. You saw how big he was. He's built like a back.
Yeah,
so,
he's a big dude.
Yeah, so that won't be an adjustment for him. He's used to competing against great players, so competition won't be an adjustment for him, and he's, you know, really, really smart. He's like a Berrios type. So I think Restrepo, he'll play early somehow, maybe punt returns. You know, he'll find his way on the field. Keyshawn Smith made some splash plays, definitely athletic and talented, and looks like a good signing. He's a little skinny. I'm not sure he's going to be ready to go, but it's possible. Redding really missed out on a chance in spring because of that wrist injury. But he's got the body type and the personality that really hard, just like Restrepo, really hardworking. That tends to lend itself to playing early. Who am I missing? Daz Worsham. He was a little hurt from what I could see. I mean, he played, but I didn't see. I don't know if he's 100% back. It's also a little skinny. I could see him taking a red shirt, just getting fully comfortable with those hips and building up his body a little bit. So it's wide open at receiver. You know, I think Brevin will be the number one receiver in general, and Mallory's going to catch a lot of balls, and we'll see which receiver steps up.
Yeah, I think that I know a lot of people are worried about the wide receiver room, but I think that we have to take into effect just this offense and how much more simple it's going to be for these guys. And I think Mallory said it after the first practice that it took him like 10, 20 minutes to learn this playbook.
Right.
And so, two guys that I'm really, I'm not down on them and I'm not doubting them, but this is kind of a make it or break it year for them it's Mark Pope and also Nesta Silvera. Just because they came into, you know, they came to Miami with such flair and you know, Nesta was very loud. He still is loud. Do you think that 2020 is the year that both of these guys have their breakout season?
I feel better about Nesta than Pope. I think Pope can do a lot better in the system. I think just, again, getting the ball in his hands quick. He has the speed and quickness, and he has talent going deep. I don't know if he's ever going to be the route runner that maybe some of us, myself included, thought he could develop into coming out. Another thing with Pope is he's older. He's really like a senior's age right now. I think he's like 22. I'm not exactly sure, but he was an older high school kid. So you wonder how much meat's left on the bone in terms of his development. You know, compared to like a Keyshawn Smith, if you look at him, he looks like a kid. So I think Pope can have a better year. Number one receiver might be too rich for my blood. But I think he can be better. Now, Silvera, that position, that defensive tackle position, is one that typically takes time to develop. It's really a man's position. Historically, even some of the great Miami defensive tackles of the past took a few years to really become what they ultimately became. So Nesta, I think, is based on what he did in spring, he was really dominant. Again, he was going against guards that maybe weren't the best. So you have to take that into account. But he was really, really, really impressive to me. And looked a lot different. He had an injury that kind of slowed him down last year. But I think he's a guy that could break out. Now, will he be like a Warren Sapp? I don't know if he has that kind of athletic ability to be that really, really great defensive tackle, that All-American type. I don't know if he's that athletic, but this system is very favorable. And he has a very good first step. He's strong. And something about Silvera that I don't think gets enough credit is he's very smart on the field. When he was at Heritage, he was almost like a linebacker. The way he played, like you ran a screen, he'd sniff it out. He made a lot of tackles, you know, not just tackles for loss and splash plays, but actual volume of tackles, which is unusual for a DT. So I think the more he plays and gets into the flow of the game, the more you'll see those kind of things. And I expect big things from Nesta. I really do. I think, you know, if you expect him to be a Vince Wilfork or that kind of guy, Cortez Kennedy, I would say probably not that athletic to that level and just that talented. But I think he'd be very, very good, especially in the system.
So coming out of the spring practices, we heard a lot about Christian Williams. The cornerback position has long been one that I've, you know, been frustrated with. And, you know, whether it's the recruiting or just the lack of bodies that we have there. So what did you see when it came to Christian Williams? And outside of him, what do you think about that unit that we have at corner?
He was good in the spring. He started half the practices. So obviously he made an impression. Big guy, you know, looks 6'1" and looks thick, probably like 190. I don't know his exact measurements, but he looks big out there. It passes the look test. He was a guy that played all over the field in high school, has some of that wide receiver ability. Just an athlete. You know, he carries himself like an athlete. He's not necessarily a speedster, but he's athletic. So, I like everything he brings to the table physically. You know, I wasn't sure if he was going to be a corner or a corner that turns into a safety like Redwine when he first came in. But I asked one of the guys on defense on the staff, and they said, no, we like how he runs. We think he could be corner. And obviously they showed it, that they liked him by playing him and starting him in spring. So I think he'd be good. You know, like a freak of nature, like these Ohio State or LSU defensive backs. Maybe not, but I think he could be good NFL type of guy. in that Mike Williams mold. And I'd probably put, like, if that's how I characterize really all of these guys, is I put them in that Mike Jackson, 28. I put them in that category of players. That's Blades, Ivy, Williams, you know, just guys that are big, that can run, that can play the ball, that develop as tacklers the more time they're in the system, and then ultimately become real good college players and get drafted. I could see that for all three of those guys. I wouldn't put them in that LSU, Ohio State, you know, I hate to say it, Florida category, where you have these guys that run 4.4 and get drafted first round. I don't see that for any of those guys, but I can see them as NFL players, just talent wise. And I think they'll be solid in the system as they develop.
Okay.
So how much trouble do you think we'd be in? Say one of those, we'll say Blades in particular, just cause I like him is the most likely to break out in that group. Say Blades has a breakout year and then ends up being like a fifth round draft pick and declares. How much trouble is that unit in for the following season?
I don't think it's as bad as you might think. Remember, Tecord Couch is there, and he's getting bigger. He can cover. He's fast. He can tackle. He will be a factor out there. So what do you have? DJ Ivy. If you have DJ Ivy and Williams, those will be two guys coming back with starting experience, assuming the spring trends hold and Williams ends up playing a lot. You know, those two guys can be good. I think Ivy's someone who really his issues have been mental. Obviously, he had that brain fart against Georgia Tech and a couple other plays where he kind of lost his confidence, which you need at cornerback. But when I saw him in spring, he was bullying guys. And talking to people, you know, in the team, they say he's the best corner, better than Blades. They really, really like Ivy. Really book smart guy. Physically, he's gotten huge. He's like, you know, you see the guy. He looks like a frontline corner with his size and his length. I'm told he's really worked on his speed. He's getting in that 4.4, late, high 4.4, low 4.5 range. You know, he was someone that wasn't a track guy or anything in high school. He kind of had to learn how to run, but was always very explosive. I think he had like a 36 vert in camp and a very, you know, like a 4.2 shuttle. So it was really just that speed catching up to his explosiveness, which has happened. And, you know, he had three interceptions last year, so it's not like he can't catch the ball. Question with him is just, to me, confidence. Once he gets that confidence as a rising junior, if he shows what he showed in spring, translates it to the games, I think Ivy will be very, very solid as a corner. And then so beyond those three, you know, you get Dunson and Clark this year. Clark, that to me is more of a project. I can see him ending up on offense when it's all said and done, but I'm a big Dunson fan. I think Dunson was a major steal. He was the best corner at the opening in Atlanta. He's huge. He played at a good level of competition in Georgia. He played both ways, so he has ball skills. He can tackle. He's physical. He's aware. Very much similar to Christian Williams and all these other guys. I mean, they all kind of have that same profile. So I think Dunson will jump right into that group, and I don't think you're going to miss a beat. I think what's missing from the corner group, again, is that next level of corner. Which mm-hmm. I would say the only teams that have had that are Ohio State, Alabama, Florida, LSU, and Clemson in the last couple of years. You know, those corners are just a little different in terms of the combination of the size and the speed. We're there on the size, probably not yet on the speed. So that's what I'd say about the corners. That's where I think we had last time we won a championship, we had two first round corners with Buchanan and Rump. So, you know, that's the missing ingredient, but I don't think they're going to be bad. I think they'll be pretty good.
Okay. And that's interesting that you're giving praise to Isaiah Dunson, because I felt like that signing got a lot of heat from Canes fans. I'm not really sure why, because, you know, I'm kind of like you. I really like, you know, what I see in him. And I think, you know, I said that Christian Williams was the steal of the 2019 recruiting class. And I think Dunson can end up being one of the steals of the 2020 recruiting class. Give me one player on offense and defense who is flying under the radar, but you think that, you know, who could have a breakout season.
All right, we're back with D Money. We were having some technical difficulties. We got his phone situation worked out. And, yeah, so go ahead, man. We just asked you about the breakout players on offense, defense, but you had something else to add, correct?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm sweating into my phone here walking around Miami Beach and lost the audio, so I had to switch. But, yeah, on Isaiah Dunson, I wanted to add one thing. You know, you mentioned that Canes fans weren't as excited about him despite being a four-star player with good offers and camp performance and good film. You know, I think with him, he ran a slow 40 as a sophomore, and that maybe led to some of that negativity. But what people need to remember is if you are an athletic guy and you have life in your legs and you have, let's say, a very good vertical leap or some good jumping numbers, a lot of times you will develop that speed. So, you know, an example I'll use is Redwine. This guy was always a great jumper. He would do backflips after Killian games. He ran like a 4.77 with bad numbers as a junior in his testing in high school. Ended up as one of the best athletes at the combine. Michael Jackson, same thing. 4.6 guy, had a good vert, I think 36 in high school, and then ended up developing into one of the better athletes at the combine at the cornerback position. DJ Ivy, I think, is trending in that direction. Another guy who had a 36-inch vert. Dunson had a 22.75 long jump, I want to say as a sophomore. So that's a lot of explosiveness. Wow. And I think as he gets used to training to run and really focusing in on that, I think you're going to see his speed tick up into that 4 or 5 range, which at his size is more than good enough. And he's a great athlete otherwise. So, you know, Dunson to me is a big time guy. He's going to fit right in and really look the part at cornerback.
But I think part of what you're saying, you know, the disappointment, and this is probably a bunk narrative, and admittedly I've bought into it too. I think with him and Christian Williams, it's where you know, we strike out on all the corners that we've been targeting on the early signing day, and then we kind of pull these random kids that we've never heard their names, you know, seemingly out of a hat, and end up locking them down. And so it's probably a bunk narrative, because you're saying that you really like both him and Christian Williams. But that's probably where the negativity comes from, at least in my perspective, is just that, you know, we're missing out on some of the local guys, you know, and it just kind of feels like what's that called? Just like damage control.
Right. Well, these are 4-star guys. You know, it's not like we're replacing whoever we lost with somebody no one's ever heard of. These are 4-star guys with tools from, you know, Georgia and Alabama, SEC country, SEC offers. So I hear what you're saying, but these are guys with pedigree. You know, it's not like these are sleepers that we have to sell ourselves on. You know, and a guy that had not necessarily a similar player, different body type, and had that dual sport thing. It was kind of a weird recruitment, but another 4-star guy that came on the scene after we missed some people was Corn Elder. Out of Tennessee. He was a 4-star guy that we got out of nowhere at the end. A lot of people thought he was going to play basketball, but no one really had thought about him, and they were upset with some of the folks we lost that year. He ended up being an NFL corner and a great Cane. So, you know, no one remembers the recruitment process once they start playing. So I think those guys, once we see them on the field and see how they look and perform, I think we'll feel pretty good about Dunson. But the breakout players, to get back to the original question, on offense and defense – you know, obviously guys like De'Ara King, Brevin Jordan, not going to count those guys. I would say on offense, the running backs. You know, I think the running backs, meaning Cam Harris and Jalen Knighton, maybe Don Chaney gets into that picture too. I think they are going to thrive in this system. I know King, when he first got here, was really, really impressed with the running backs. I had heard that, you know, kind of offline, and then he just did an interview with the ACC Network and talked about how great Cam Harris was. I know he's real big on Jalen Knighton too. Didn't get to see Chaney because he was hurt in spring. But I think those guys are going to surprise people. They're tough. They're athletic. They have burst. And in this offense, I think they'll do well, especially, you know, we have that read option threat now with King, which we haven't had. That's going to allow them to spring past that first level and use their speed. So I like both backs on offense to sort of break out. And on the defensive end, I'd say Sam Brooks. Sam Brooks is someone I know they're really, really excited about. He's a freak of nature. Just from a testing standpoint, you're talking about a guy who's 6'2", let's say 220, 215 right now, probably running in that 4.4s, 4.5s. I heard someone on the team say they thought he was the fastest, most explosive guy on the team. Not linebacker, player. So that tells you how explosive he is. He's full strength from his knee injury. He had an adjustment going from defensive end to linebacker in college, but he's made that adjustment. You saw him in the bowl game. He had double-digit tackles. He can still pass rush. That's his bread and butter. So if you have him blitzing like Shaq did and Pickney did, both those guys got a lot of sacks for off-ball linebackers. I see Brooks being an even better version of that when he blitzes. And the intangible stuff I heard with him is real good. You know, tough, cares, learns, has a knack. So everything I've heard on Brooks is real good. We need him. He's going to play a lot. I'd put Brooks as my breakout player on the defensive end.
Hey, so I think we got one more question each for you before you take off. So I love hearing you talk about this, man. I mean, Marsh described you as an encyclopedia of Kane's knowledge, and that's very clear from the interview. So would you mind, I guess, giving me the overall breakdown of how you see this team, and then just very brief, and then, you know, give me a projection of what you think our record will be at the end of the year?
Well, you know, obviously the pandemic makes it tough. Who knows? What if we only play conference games? So yeah. That's all kind of uncertainty. I'd say if I broke down the team, I would say strength-wise, the two most important positions on the field in football, pro and college, if you ask me to break it down, I think most people would agree, would be the quarterback position on offense and then the defensive end pass rusher position on defense. Here, there's really not a lot of projection there. I mean, King, he scored 50 touchdowns in college football, so we know he's good already. And it's going to be plug and play with him. Then defensive end, Rousseau and Roche are the two best pass rushers coming back in college football from a statistical standpoint. Again, no projection there. Jalen Phillips, when he was a freshman at UCLA, looked like the next first-round pick Myles Garrett type. And I saw him in spring. He looked fully healthy. So there's some projection there, but you've seen him produce in college, albeit a couple years ago. So there's proven production at those positions, plus just a lot of great talent with those two spots. I think you could legitimately make the case that we're the best defensive ends in the country. In fact, I'd make that case strongly. And then King, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think he's like number six in Heisman odds. So looking at the team, the two best positions are the two most important positions. That's going to carry us a long way. With the rest of the team, I think you have a lot of speed at both ends. I think it was probably the most athletic defense we've had, top to bottom, and we have a lot of speed on offense. Question is going to be physicality on both ends. Can you run the ball with physicality with the offensive line? And then on the defensive end, you're losing Shaq, who was the physical heartbeat of the team. I mean, heartbeat of the team in general, but physically, he set the tone. So I think that will be a loss to replace Shaq. And, you know, we'll see how much tougher we can be on defense, because that's going to be the key. Just can we be physical? Projection-wise, I feel good. I think, you know, in a full season, the expectation should be double-digit wins. With this quarterback, with these defensive ends, with the talent we have, the schedule we have, this should be a double-digit win team. I thought they took to the offense well in spring. Again, a shortened spring. But they hit the ground running. That last practice before it got called off, they were balling on offense. So this is a good team. It's going to come down to physicality. Obviously, the offensive line is the number one receiver going to emerge. And then the linebackers, are they going to come together? But you got the kicking game solved. Proven kicker. That was a major weakness last year. Proven punter. That was a major weakness 2 years ago. And a lot of speed. So my expectations are high. They got to perform. This is a put up or shut up for Manny Diaz. It's not a young team. It's a young team as far as Miami players. But when you bring in a fifth year quarterback, a sixth year offensive lineman, a fifth year defensive end, you know, experienced kicker, we become an older team at key positions. So youth is not an excuse.
Yeah, hey man, that's what we're all hoping for, man. We've been patient as Hurricanes fans over the past few years, and we've been praying for a scenario like this season where you get a guy like Derek King, you get an offensive coordinator like Rhett Lashley. So I completely agree. This is a put up or shut up year for Manny Diaz. There really is no, I mean, besides the pandemic, there really isn't any real excuse that you can't win at least 9 or 10 games. So last question for you. So over at SB Nation, we're in the middle of our rivalry week. And so I tweeted out from the Fours Up account yesterday, just like a fun conversation on who do you hate the most as a Miami fan, whether it's the Gators or the Seminoles. And as of right now, it's pretty neck and neck in terms of voting. And so I wanted to ask you, D-Money, who is your number one rival for the Hurricanes? Is it the Seminoles or is it the Gators?
I would say the Gators.
Ooh.
I'd say the Gators. Just their fans are real annoying. You know, the majority of their fans are people that went to to UF because they were, you know, good students or whatever. And then once they get there, they're like, oh, college football's cool. And then they become college football fans at the school. You know, they learn about college football from blogs. They're just kind of – they're just a dorkier brand of fan. So, you know, what happens is you get these guys that they read a couple blogs and overnight they think they're football experts and they're just dorks and quite annoying in my experience from dealing with them. So I would say Florida for sure, number one. I mean, the Noles, you know, I call them the intercontinental champs of college football. I don't know if you guys were wrestling fans growing up, but they're, you know, they're kind of like just second to Miami in every respect. They just kind of copied our style, just not quite as good. So what do you really get mad about? The Gators to me represent something different, just something dorkier, more annoying to me. So I would say the Gators, number one.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no wrong answer to that question. But yeah, they do have a really just weird fan base, man. And FSU fan, I lived in Tallahassee, and so yeah, those fans are weird too. But hey, brother, thank you so much for coming on. And even with the technical difficulties, I honestly think this is one of the best interviews we've had. And so, I mean, and whenever you want to hop on the show again, we'd love to have you, bro.
No, man, appreciate you having me on. Keep doing what you're doing. You guys are kicking butt. So, yeah, anytime, man. Really appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. It's you know, great getting to talk to you a little bit and hearing what you have to say, man. You're got some brilliant takes on the Canes. So, yeah, please come back soon.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay, thanks.
All right, have a good one, brother.
Take it easy.
Cool, man. Well, so I think we're running a little late. So maybe should we answer that one question from Ethan that we got to, and then we can save the rest of these questions for another mailbag episode, maybe early next week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so let's see.
And if there's an easier question to answer, feel free to ask that one.
Yeah, I guess that one would be Ethan, we'll get you next time, brother.
That's a lengthy answer.
Agreed. It's a great question, but it'll take more time than I have. I got to get away to some family barbecue type stuff. So let's see. Okay, I like this one from Tyler Chumley. Fourth and goal for the win. Ball on the 3-yard line. 1 second left on the play clock. Who gets the rock and why for next season?
You know, I initially was going to say Cam Harris, but I'm going to go with De'Aaron King.
Yeah. You know what popped into my head immediately was that highlight of like the 4th and 9. I think it was against like Cincinnati or something where they ran a QB draw and he had that just filthy spin move and turned it into a 50-yard touchdown run.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and when he like when he's down near the goal line, King is he's a great runner for starters, but especially near the goal line. And I, you know, Cam Harris isn't a bad answer either. And I really love how D-Money touched on the running backs because I've been saying for a while that I don't think Knighton is going to have a good season. I think people are overlooking Cam Harris a lot too. But if we're in. You know, if we need that touchdown, we're down near the goal line. I got to give it to De'Aaron King. Just run it up the middle. Maybe do a little read option, lead option, whatever kind of damn option you can muster up. But I think King's the guy that can, you know, get the ball into the end zone.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, man. It's dude, I mean, just that highlight. I can't remember. I'm sure everyone's seen it. But think about how much confidence you have to have in your quarterback. To like game on the line, you have to score, and it's like 4th and 9, and you run a QB draw. And not only does he get the first down, but he busts it open into a touchdown run. So, I mean, that's the kind of guy that we're gonna have under center next year, man. It's that's exciting.
Well, I mean, I've been saying it since the beginning. He's a threat that Miami has never had. The quarterback position. I mean, it's love Ken Dorsey to death. I love Brad Kaya with all my heart. But I mean, I don't think Al Golden was going to call a quarterback draw on 4th and 9 to Kaya.
Yeah. Oh yeah. As much as much of a Brad stan as I am, there's maybe a QB draw wasn't his strength.
And that's okay. That's completely fine. He set a record for passing, and that's what you're supposed to do. But King is the guy. King is the guy that, I mean, he can do it all. And I'm so excited to watch him play. Like, I've never been this excited to watch, like, a player for the Hurricanes just play.
Yeah,
like, man. It was kind of like it was at the end of last year when Greg Rousseau was going on his tear. Like, every Saturday, I would be like, I didn't wake up saying, ooh, the Canes are playing today. I'm like, oh, I get to see Greg Rousseau play today.
Yeah, I was like that with Duke Johnson. Honestly, that was the last time I felt that way. And I mean, I know that you missed kind of his like best season as a Hurricane. But geez, man,
he was a baller.
Oh yeah, and I, you know, I still think that he has some, you know, to use an expression that D Money used, I think there's some meat left on the bone for his pro career, man. I would really love to see a team give him the opportunity to get more touches and become a feature back, because I think that there's I think when given the opportunity, he can prove a lot of people wrong. I think he's more than just a role player.
Well, I mean, it's hard when you get drafted by the worst franchise in football history, the Browns, and then you go to the Texans, where I think my grandmother could be a better head coach than Bill O'Brien. So
for sure, man. I would love to see him end up on like the Buccaneers or something this season, and see him go to work with Tom Brady.
Oh,
that'd be nice.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. But yeah, that was I mean, even with all the difficulties, I really think that was one of the best interviews we've had. D Money brought the damn heat. So we'll have to get him on again.
He's completely brilliant. So yeah, make sure you guys are checking out his stuff over at Canes in Sight.
Absolutely. And we will be back for hopefully shows next week. We got a few really good guests lined up. You know, some recruits, some former players. Yeah. And then just a lot of in-betweens, too. So big things are ahead for the Fours Up. And thank you guys for supporting us during this kind of a crazy time, kind of a crazy few weeks. But you guys have stayed with us, and just going to keep getting better and better. So
yeah.
Anything else you want to add, bro?
No, man, just the usual send-off of Go Canes.
Go Canes, baby!
Yep. See ya.
Up podcast. Remember to like.